Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil. Today's podcast is brought to you by SeatGeek, the smartest way to buy and sell tickets. Use the promo code LOHEAT to get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. We are doing the mailbag today because that's what we do on Mondays. We've got a lot of questions, so we're going to separate this mailbag into two parts. So if you don't get to your question on today's show, look out for your question in part two later in the week. But let's just dive right into this, part one of our two-part mailbag this week. First question. If you go back and watch the Lakers versus Heat game where Justice Winslow had 23 points, 13 rebounds, 3 assists, and 4 steals, he was primarily guarded by either D'Angelo Russell or Brandon Ingram. While he posted up, spun, attacked to the basket, etc. I think this is evidence that Winslow should play the two. He can use his physical strength and playmaking to create offensive mismatches. He's the perfect size for a two, yet we insist because he has guard skills and can play the four that that's his ideal position. Why not play to his strengths and make his offense a positive? Thoughts? This is from Joseph Donato. Really interesting question, David.
It was. You know, first of all, I'm surprised that anybody would go back and watch that game, particularly when it was a mid-December game in the middle of when the Heat were really struggling.
Joseph,
so yes, hat off to Joseph for that one, for you know, grinding through it. But I did watch the highlights of that, so that quite the same thing. And he was right in that he was being guarded somewhat by Russell and Ingram. It seemed like they were doing a lot of switching on there.
I went back and tracked all 16 shots.
Yeah.
So first shot, post up, defended by Russell. Second shot, layup on the fast break, was defended by Russell, was able to get the shot over Russell, but not really fair, it was on the fast break. Third shot, pick and roll with Russell on him. Fourth shot was a post up with Russell on him. Fifth shot was a fast break. Sixth shot was a floater, Dang was on him, but Russell got switched onto him on a 1-3 pick and roll, which was really interesting. Seventh shot was a jumper with Russell on him. Eighth shot was a three-pointer with Russell on him. Ninth shot, and this is when the second half started, I think the Lakers decided to put Ingram on him. In that first half, it seemed a lot like Russell was just kind of on Winslow because Russell's defense isn't very good, and I think they were trying to hide him on Winslow. And in the second half, after Winslow kind of got going there, they put Ingram on him. And so his ninth shot, first shot of the second half, was a jumper over Ingram. 10th shot was a tip-in that he missed. 11th shot was a post-up with Russell back on him, but that was after a driving kick with Tyler Johnson kicked it out to Winslow, and Russell got switched onto him. 12th shot was a driving layup with Ingram on him. 13th shot was a full-court fast break. Winslow got the rebound, took it down the court, made a layup, ended up over Ingram. 14th shot was a floater. Ingram failed to pick him up in semi-transition, and then he ended up making the shot over Jordan Clarkson. 15th shot was a jumper over Luol Deng. It wasn't even over Luol Deng. It was in front of Luol Deng's face because he ran a pick and pop, and Deng just let him shoot it. And then the 16th and final shot was a pick and roll with Whiteside and a layup against. And originally, Winslow was guarded by Dang, got switched onto Thomas Robinson, and then missed the layup. But overall, he was guarded a fair amount by Russell, D'Angelo Russell and Brandon Ingram. But I think it was mostly maybe less of a positional matchup and more of just the Lakers trying to hide their weaker defenders on Miami's weakest offensive player, which was Winslow at that point. But I think Joseph's point still stands. Like, if you play him at the two, he might get guys that are smaller against him. And he really got going in that game by posting up a smaller player and shooting over him. It's not a bad idea.
I'm wondering how much of it is related to the Lakers' poor defense versus Winslow having arguably the best night of his career offensively. I mean, he got a little upset about the matchup and realized he could take advantage of it. This was also in December towards the start of the season when, you know, we were broken down by injuries already. Jay Rich was, I think, out of the lineup. Deion was probably out of the lineup at that point. You're trying to get Tyler off the bench and you've got the ball in Justice's hands quite a bit. And you wonder, you know, at that time, he's probably thinking to himself that he's got to do as much as possible with the ball in his hands. And clearly he did take advantage of the mismatch against D'Angelo. I don't know if it's necessarily sustainable as a long term solution. I think more than likely as lineups continue to go smaller, it benefits a guy like Winslow to play at the four more and more because he has the heft to guard some of those players, but then also the quickness to take advantage of mismatches that he winds up getting at the four spot. At the two, he's probably going to be guarding the best wing player anyway. If he's in the rotation, he's probably going to be guarding the opponent's best scorer.
That's a good point.
And then conversely, is he going to be able to get those shots off more consistently? I don't see it. I think, you know, this is, again, just a very good game, maybe an aberration in that sense.
So I think what I agree with Joseph to a certain extent here. The play that stands out to me the most is that sixth shot attempt by Winslow. He brings the ball up the court. Luol Deng is guarding him, right? So that's position for position.
Right.
And then the Heat run a 1-3 pick and roll. Dragic sets a screen for Winslow. Sets a screen against Deng. Russell gets switched on to Winslow at that point, right? So they're targeting the worst defensive player on the Lakers, but also a smaller player in D'Angelo Russell compared to Winslow. So they set the screen. He's not that much smaller, but he's like skinnier, and Winslow can still shoot over him. But Russell gets switched onto Winslow. Winslow comes around. This is on the left side of the court. Comes around to the right side. Whiteside sets another screen to just get him a little bit more space, and Winslow's able to make the floater, and he pretty much had a wide open shot at that point. Whiteside screen wasn't great, shocker, but Russell was able to stay in front of him. But they gave him enough room, and got the switch that they wanted. That Winslow was able to take advantage and shoot over a smaller guy. I don't think it matters what position he plays. If he's playing the three or the four, you could still run him through those 1-3-2-4 pick and rolls, get the switch, and that's what you're looking for ultimately. It doesn't matter if he starts at shooting guard.
I was going to say, did they run something similar with Dragic shooting the pick for James Johnson to help free him up on occasion? He had the ball in his hands, I think they tried to set picks for him to get to the hoop, and we saw how successful it was once he started getting more comfortable. So maybe this is the precursor for that kind of, you know what, if you get a guy who's big enough and can handle the ball somewhat the way Justice can and the way James Johnson can, then all of a sudden you can free them up. And we've seen that even in the playoffs with Isaiah Thomas setting screens for Al Horford so he can get open from the perimeter. And, of course, you know, James Johnson's decent from the outside. Winslow isn't. But ideally, you would have guys who can shoot the ball and drive to the hoop, and that's able to take advantage of those pick-and-roll mismatches.
And that's exactly what it's going to be, is when Winslow's back in this lineup, I think that's how they're going to use him. And, hey, just go post these guys up. Eventually, you'll start making shots. You know, you might have a game where you start making three-pointers. We've seen Winslow have games where he's making threes. It happens, not often, but that's probably the way that you use them. So again, Joseph, I think he's on the right track here.
Yeah.
But it's playing him at the two is a little bit of an old school way of getting those matchups. And we know Spoelstra likes positionless basketball, and that's
right.
In today's NBA, you get a guy like Winslow who can defend opposing fours but play like a guard. You could play him like a guard on offense, just let him, but it gives Miami four ball handlers to put around Hassan Whiteside. That's the real advantage there, and you can set any amount of screens and switches and basically get the defense off balance, find the matchup that you want. Maybe the team's best or worst defender is D'Angelo Russell at the point guard position, or maybe the team's worst defender is their power forward. You have enough switchy guys that you can make those, you can call out those mismatches on a game-to-game basis.
Right. Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. And I mean, I think that's the key to today's game is obviously having as many players to be as versatile offensively and defensively as possible. Mm-hmm. Miami is somewhat hamstrung because of Hassan Whiteside, who's limited to, you know, basically only playing one position and not necessarily adept at guarding anybody else other than bigs. But with the exception of that, you want to have, you know, four players that can switch off. And that's part of the problem why Roddy Magruder was torched late in the season when he was guarding bigger players, guys like DeMar DeRozan and Paul George, et cetera, guys who would take advantage of the height mismatch. And so you want to have a guy like Winslow, who's a little bit taller, a little bit longer, and probably much more capable of getting into the shirts of these guys who are a little bit taller than Magruder and could probably hang with them defensively. So, it was probably... He probably would have helped out immensely in Miami's late season playoff push. So, but once you get him back and he's healthy, it's I think we're tied to this idea of who fits into where as far as positions are concerned, and I think we're trying to see that less and less. It's just about having guys that can handle the ball at every position, you know. And obviously, the term that's being used is the unicorn, but we're looking at basically bigs who can do what guards do or have historically done. And I think you kind of want more and more of that. If you've got a guy who can do that at the four, like you said, who can, you know, post up smaller guards but can defend bigger fours, you want to have him out there. It's important to have the best, most versatile players available to you at any point in time. And I wonder how much of that's going to shape the draft moving forward as well.
Well, I love your point about having Whiteside in the middle. He's capable of being a dominant center, and he's very good for his position, but you're absolutely right. Having him, somebody that can only play the five and only guard fives makes the other four positions being versatile really important. I thought that was a really good point. SeatGeek, by the way, we love talking about SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest and easiest way to find tickets for any Heat games that you want to see in person next season. There's nothing like being in the arena for the biggest moments of the season. And with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats that you want for a great value. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats for this weekend or any game of the season. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because they price compare for you. You know, opening up 1,000 browsers and searching this site and that site, just go to SeatGeek. They make it easy for you. They help you get the most bang for your buck by giving each seat and ticket a grade based on its value. Takes all the guesswork out of it. Plus, SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee, so you could shop for tickets with confidence. Best of all, our listeners get a $20 off rebate on their first SeatGeek purchase. How do you do it? Download the SeatGeek app. Go to the settings tab. Click add a promo code. Enter the promo code LOHEAT. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app. Enter the promo code LOHEAT today. Promo code LOHEAT. Our second question comes from Corey Ned on Twitter. Is the draft the best option for upgrading the four spot versus the trade market or free agency? So before we jump into this question, I think a lot of people have looked at that power forward spot as the area where the Heat need an upgrade. And that's fair. But we did see James Johnson start at the four towards the end of the season when Miami was dealing with a lot of injuries.
Right.
And he thrived in that starting role. So even if he's a starter, Miami's going to need to address the backup four because I don't think O'Carroll White is going to be the backup four, right? At this point, he's probably more of a deep reserve guy. McRoberts, who knows if he'll be healthy. They're going to have to address the four spot in some way, whether it's a starter or a backup. I think. I don't know if you agree with that.
I do. I mean, even if you have a guy who just starts for a few minutes and then immediately gets subbed out for James Johnson, if you're able to re-sign him and you continue using him off the bench, it's still important to find somebody who can hold that together for a few minutes until James comes in.
So what do you think about this then? If the draft is the best option for upgrading the four, or do you think they should trade for a guy or find somebody in free agency?
I don't know that the trade option is a very good one. I'm trying to think of the best options available via trade.
So the thing I thought of when I heard trade market was how the Heat landed Luke Babbitt last year by basically just paying the Pelicans for him. So maybe something like a fringe move like that, but I don't think they're going to go out and trade, like do a sign and trade for Paul Millsap. I don't think it's going to be something to that. I just don't see them making that sort of move. I don't even know what power forwards are available via trade. It might be like a fringe guy like Babbitt that they might be able to find, but
You know, arguably, as to our first point, I mean, we might already have a player waiting in the wings in Winslow who could come in that start at the four and then kind of sub down and play the small forward position if you're able to re-sign James Johnson. You might already have the starting power forward on the roster, somebody who's young, available, versatile, and cheap. So I think that's a possibility. You mentioned Okoro White. He did show some flashes. If he's your third power forward, if you've got Winslow starting, James Johnson coming off the bench, and then Okoro coming in and giving some minutes at the four and five spot, I think that works out pretty well as well.
Am I crazy in thinking Okoro White's a center?
I don't. He's got the length. Yeah. He doesn't have the heft. No. But again, you know, smaller lineups. Yeah. You know, the position, the way that we view positions is changing so much. You never know. I mean, if he was a better ball handler, there'd probably be a team out there looking at to move him to the three or the two spot. You know, you got Giannis Antetokounmpo at 7 feet tall and basically playing one through five in a given rotation. So it's hard to see where players fit in. It's just, you just want to be able to maximize what they can do and find those right blends of talents.
If the Heat are looking to acquire a contributor at power forward,
right?
I do think the draft is probably the best option, just given I think the value you can get at the 14th pick, which we're assuming Miami's going to get. They have a 98% chance of having the 14th pick, versus anybody in free agency. You and I like Jared Sullinger. He's a power forward. I think you and I like him maybe as a small ball center a little bit more.
Agreed.
There's Patrick Patterson, who's been talked about a bunch by Heat fans, but he's another guy that's been talked about a bunch by like every fans of like every NBA team is like a solid role player for. I just feel like Patrick Patterson's going to get overpaid this summer.
And the top options, Blake Griffin, Paul Millsap, Serge Ibaka, they're probably out of Miami's price range. I don't think Miami's looking at any one of those unless they can get a really, really good deal or, you know, start talking about a sign and trade or something along those lines. But yeah. I think that's not realistic.
Please stay away from Ibaka, Riley. Please just stay away from Ibaka. And I love Paul Millsap as a player, and he's really good for today's NBA. I just don't see Riley spending $31+ million a year for him.
Yeah.
I just don't. That's just not the kind of player that they need.
So. And I'm looking at the other top options, and all of them are limited. Pau Gasol, he's clearly a five now. He's not really the four. Dirk Nowitzki's not going anywhere. Ersan Ilyasova, value.
Yeah.
Has some value, but I don't – I mean, if you can get him in a really good deal
– Yeah, that's the
thing
problem.
He comes in and contributes, but he also hogs the ball a little bit. I saw him up close in Orlando. They didn't really like him there. Maybe they didn't utilize him well.
They probably didn't.
Yeah, I mean
– They don't utilize any of their players well.
But then he went to Philadelphia. Then he went to Atlanta.
Ilyasova is the power forward version of Anthony Morrow. It's everybody's like, oh, a guy who can shoot from three. Let's go get him. And then you get him on the roster, and it's like, oh, he can't do anything else for us. Like and that's it. You fall in love with him from afar, and then you get him in house, and you're just like, you know what? He's not very good.
Zach Randolph. I don't know what his long-term plans are in Memphis, but I don't imagine Miami.
For Miami. Not a good option for Miami.
Taj Gibson?
Greg Monroe? Is he going to opt out and try to get some more money?
Oh, that is a good question. I don't know if I've heard anything specifically, but, I mean, again, he's also more of a five than a four, right?
Yeah, at this point.
Patterson, Jamichael Green's an interesting option, but he's probably going to get paid a lot.
Yeah. I think Memphis is going to do what they can to keep him. So I do, and then if you look at the draft, I mean, you've got a bunch of power forwards right in that mid-first round. You've got Ivan Rabb of Cal, who I'm starting to like again, by the way. I was
high
up on
Chris Bosh comparisons?
Well, so I hate the Bosh comparisons. I don't think
so.
Bosh is way more athletic. He could put the ball on the floor. He was a really, really polished in the post, even coming out and of college. Just an offensive juggernaut. Ivan Rabb is not that. Rabb actually compares more favorably to me to Al Horford. Horford eventually got a three-point shot, but was never as prolific from three as Bosh was. Was a better rebounder overall than Bosh, I think. Rabb is an NBA-ready rebounder right now. Good defender. Better defender than Bosh was when Bosh came out. And so is Horford. Horford was a good defender when he came out of Florida. So I think I like Rab compared more to Horford. And Horford's never like a first or second option. He's like a third option guy. Where Bosch we knew was a first option guy who played to a third option. I think Rab is just like, get him in that third option. He can hit a few 18-footers for you. He'll get you 8 rebounds, 3 assists, and 14 points a game. And if that's the player you want, that's the player you get. You can play mostly 4. You can play 5 in smaller units. I like the Horford comparison. I like Rab. But, you know, you got a bunch of guys. You got Collins out of Wake Forest, TJ Leaf out of UCLA, Tyler Lydon, kind of a Luke Babbitt-like power forward out of Syracuse. You got a lot of guys in that mid-first round area that he could get. So for value, it might be best to get a power forward in that spot, or just find like the next James Johnson in free agency. I don't think the Heat are going to be able to pay a lot for a power forward. Ultimately, I think what you said earlier, you re-sign James Johnson, Winslow's your backup 4, and then you just go get more guys with length to play the 3, and you're able to basically just shift Winslow down and play that way, maybe some Okara White spot minutes here and there. That might be the best option.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, let's go with the next question. This is from Dos Minutos on Twitter, our friend Dos. Predict what you think Deion and JJ end up making in free agency.
Yeah, it's really hard to see the market. Obviously, it's so flexible. You know, one big move can shift everything completely. If I had to nail down an amount, I'd say Deion signs a 5-year deal worth $60 million, with the last year being a team option, maybe a player option. And then for James Johnson at 30 years old, I see him getting somewhere around 3 for $45 million.
I see Waiters getting a 3-year deal with a player option in that third year. I think he's going to want to enter free agency a little bit quicker at $10 or $11 million a year. So maybe like $32 million, $33 million.
3 for $32 million.
Yeah, with a player option in that third year. And James Johnson, I could see him getting 12-ish million a year to maybe $15 million a year. He'll probably end up getting... I think he ends up taking a discount for Miami. He's going to get offers of like $14, $15 million a year, but I think ultimately he signs for Miami at $11 or $12 million a year.
So 3 for $36 million.
But gets the full raises, you know, the max amount of raises that he could get with Miami for like 3 years. Yeah, I think 3 years sounds about right. Maybe 4.
I'm just thinking at 30 years and given his career being somewhat up and down and not having really made him opportunity to make a lot of money, he's going to look to cash in. We're talking about him leaving behind an extra $10, $15 million. You know, if he could get a 4-year deal somewhere, that'll be some other team's option, you know, a problem in 4 years to pay a 34, 35-year-old version of James Johnson $15 million a year. But, so, I mean, if he can get it, he'll get it, I think.
That's my concern. I agree with you. But I don't know, man. Maybe I'm naive, but everything I read is just like... I think he loves the opportunity. No, you're more cynical than I am, I think. But I think he loves the opportunity, and I think he likes the playing time. And I think, you know, you look at maybe giving up $2 million a year, $3 million a year.
That's a lot of money to give up. I know, man.
But I think like everything I've heard was just how much he enjoys playing basketball this way.
Sure.
If the Heat say, you're our starting power forward next year, we're going to give you $12 million a year. You know, I have this vision that Haslam retires. You're right, James Johnson's old, but Haslam retires and James Johnson takes that mantle almost. Just like, not that anybody could replace Haslam, but just does the best he can and just be, and he's the guy in that locker room that keeps Heat culture alive or something like that. Like,
I mean, he's working out over the summer.
Yeah.
There were positive things, but conversely, what's a guy going to do when he's in his last second interviews there at the end of the season? Is he going to trash the team that helped him?
We've also seen, like, David West, for example, turned down $10 million a year because he wanted to get an opportunity to play. Even though West did get paid, like he's been paid, so it's easy.
Well, he wanted an opportunity to win a ring. He forgoed his contract in Indiana so he could go to the Spurs. Now he's with the Warriors with a pretty good chance to chase the ring. So I don't know if Johnson is at that same mindset at this point in his career. I mean, there's no denying that he wants to win. But I think it's probably a hearty blend of wanting to win realistically and also get paid quite a bit of money considering how much he has been paid throughout the course.
I think it's a blend of wanting to play a big role that he enjoys playing versus getting paid. I don't even know if it's about winning necessarily.
Okay. Yeah, I don't
think mostly
don't know.
It's about playing the way he wants. Like, we've heard over and over how he was just he was upset that he was just stuck in a corner in Toronto, and he's just like, this is the first place I've been where I feel like my skills have been utilized. Now, right. Maybe he's going to get paid because his skills were utilized, right? They were put, like, James Johnson was put on display. So any team that pays him is we believe would probably use James Johnson in a similar way. They're not going to just pay James Johnson $15 million a year and then do what Toronto did and stand him in a corner and let him play 12 minutes a game. So there's that too, but
maybe that's why he was so upset at Toronto, was because they were giving him a chance to highlight what he could do, therefore limiting what he might be able to make as an upcoming free agent.
Good point. All right, well, we'll see, right? Money talks.
We will.
All right, last question for part one of the mailbag. Here's a trade idea. Houston receives Tyler Johnson, Wayne Ellington, and Josh McRoberts. Miami receives Trevor Ariza and Lou Williams. Do you think Houston would do it, Mark?
No.
Okay. That's our podcast today.
That's the stinky.
Ellington, I don't think Miami does it.
You don't think Miami would do it?
What's the upgrade there? Lou Williams or Tyler Johnson? No, thank you.
I had to get rid of TJ's contract.
I guess. But I don't see, like, Ariza would be nice, right? He's the kind of guy that you want. Like, if the Heat can find an Ariza type guy, that would be good. Somebody who could shoot threes, defend at an above average level, play some three, play some four.
Yeah, but some four. I think in Miami he would probably thrive pretty well over here as a four. Yeah.
He's like, he is the NBA's like new Shane Battier, it seems like.
I can see that. And who better to learn from than Shane Battier, who's in the front office?
True. Good point. But I don't think either team does it. I don't know.
I'm sorry.
I don't think either team does it. I don't know how it. Lou Williams would be nice as your third guard, right? So that's why you could get rid of Johnson Ellington. You re-sign Waiters, and you've got Dragic and Waiters, and then basically you've got Lou Williams coming in to play either the one or the two, and he's a similar drive and kick type guy, but mostly a three-point shooter. It's not a bad fit, but defensively there's a lot. I prefer Tyler. Defensively there's just a lot to be desired, and I prefer Tyler Johnson that way.
Yeah, Tyler's too much of a mid-range guy to fit into their more system and for D'Antoni's system as well. I just can't see how they would want to make him the centerpiece. I mean, he'd obviously... Well, would he start? That's another question, too. Would he start there alongside Harden? And they still have Eric Gordon coming off the bench.
Yeah, he'd probably still be their three guard. He'd replace Lou Williams. But he'd be better defensively. Ellington's a nice three-point shooter for them. I don't see Houston doing it either. I don't see Houston doing it. They need a different type of trade. Houston does. I actually just wrote about this. They need big men, and McRoberts is not
right.
McRoberts is salary cap filler at this point. He's not a player that you can trust as an asset.
That was their most glaring weakness when Nene went down in the playoffs. That's when they started. You know, they were dominated by the Spurs inside. You did write about that for FanRag Sports. Do you have any insight as to who you think would be a good fit for Houston? Not necessarily a Miami's roster, but maybe.
I think I wrote that for the Step Back.
Oh, did you? Remember. Okay.
Yeah, I wrote it somewhere. But what was your question?
No, I wonder now, would James Johnson fit well in Houston?
100%. He would be a great fit in Houston, but they can't. No, stay away. Nah.
You don't want him.
No ideas. Don't give him any ideas. James Johnson would be the perfect fit.
He's big enough to guard. Yeah, he's big enough to guard fives.
Yeah.
He can stretch the floor very well. He drives and kicks really well. Oh, yeah. I mean,
he'd be great fit.
God damn! I just realized that we just gave him the perfect solution.
Hopefully,
there'd probably be a juggernaut.
Hopefully, Daryl Morey didn't last this long on the show. Hopefully, all right. Well, we appreciate the hypothetical trade ideas. Those are favorites. Okay. This is the end of part one. Look out for part two of the mailbag later this week. That's all we have for today. Thank you to SeatGeek, the friendliest and smartest way to buy and sell tickets. Use the promo code LOHEAT to get $20 after your first SeatGeek purchase. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. If you're not subscribed already, please do so. Get the podcast automatically every day, then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.